That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky present a power word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint it gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works.
If it's Friday and Lexington Sours appears remarkably balder, bearded, and more Cuban, then it's Bluegrass Bios on WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio. The soothing baritones that will be coming through your speakers belong to Old Faithful, Benjaneer Wolf.
Hey, Kyle.
Old Soul, Kyle Bigelow, and Old Dr. Alex Estrada.
Wow, I don't know how I feel about that, but...
More on that in a moment.
I like it, I like it. I'll roll with it.
You can tweet the show at Bluegrass Bios or listen to this or any of our fine podcasts on LexingtonCommunityRadio.org. Our guests today are Safiya Nawar, Studio Director of Arabesque World Dance, and Toby Truitt, Store Director of Lucky's Market on South Broadway. But first, long time no see, man.
Yeah, I've been real busy, trying to stay out of trouble, a lot of stuff going on, but all good
things. I doubt
emergency,
that very much.
Emergency yeah. Surgeries and all that?
A couple of exciting cases, sure.
Oh, sure. Very good.
Now, the next time that...
I did manage to take a few days off, though, so that was nice.
Yeah.
A little mini vacation, very eventful mini vacation.
Okay, well, let's hear about that, because you went down to Florida and you were hanging out with your sons.
Yes.
A few days since the last time we talked to you. Now, you told me that you had a story about going down there. What's that all about?
Oh man, you're going to love this. So we went to an alligator farm / nature preserve down in Florida. And I'm not going to name the place because I don't know how they would feel about what happened at their facility, being out there.
They're certainly listening right now.
But, yeah.
We are worldwide.
It's on the internet, man.
Yeah.
If it's on the internet, that's it. It's out there forever.
Yeah.
But so we're at this alligator farm / little mini zoo. So I'm there with my two kids and we're hanging out and there's a monkey enclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot what species of monkey it is. Irrelevant. So, like, part of the enclosure was fenced and the top of the enclosure was netted.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're looking at the monkeys. Monkeys are goofing off, doing their monkey thing, preening each other and whatnot. But we see this one monkey all the way up at the top of the enclosure sitting by himself.
Okay.
So my kids and I were like, hey, look at that guy. What's wrong with him,
The antisocial one.
Yeah, it's like, all right, this guy's like the rogue monkey, whatever. So he's up
at... one in every group.
There is, isn't there? So like, but it turned out that he wasn't antisocial or he wasn't... I guess he was rogue. He was I don't know. He was the idiot savant of the group, but he's up there, and so the kids are looking at the monkey, and I'm looking at this monkey up there, and he's like working on something. He's working with purpose and vigor on the netting. And I'm like, what's he trying to do? And my son's like, well, I think he's trying to untie it. I'm like, he can't untie it. The second my kid says that, poof, netting falls. We're all like shocked. We're like, what just happened? So now this monkey is walking. He's free to roam, right? And he's walking, and the fence was about, I don't know, about 100 feet tall.
100 feet tall.
About 100 feet high, I would
guess. Okay, that's pretty high.
Yeah. So he's walking. He's like a tightrope walker walking on the edge of the fence. The netting that you know, was on top, fell.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. So I tell my older son, Alex Jr., I'm like, hey, dude, go, you know, run and tell somebody that the monkey escaped.
There's a prison break.
So, and like, the other monkeys are clueless. I was afraid it was going to be like a Planet of the Apes thing where they all escape and take over the zoo. But like, the other monkeys are clueless. But this one monkey's like, yeah, I did it. I'm out. But something happens. Poor guy, like, trips or something, falls 100 feet and lands next door in another enclosure, which didn't have any netting. It was so
where the gators are?
No, gators were in other places. So the next enclosure over, it would have been exciting. I thought it would have been exciting if it would have fallen into the gator, you know, enclosure. But it doesn't matter, because what happened after this was equally as exciting as if he would have fallen into the gator enclosure. So he falls into the enclosure next door, and there are some birds there, which I was curious as to why their enclosure didn't have any netting, right? Or else his monkey wouldn't have fallen in. Mm-hmm. But monkey falls next door, and I don't know, he falls, and he's stunned, and we're all shocked. There's nobody else in the zoo, by the way. It's just the kids and me. All the other zoo patrons were, like, in other parts of the zoo. So there's nobody here to see this. So the monkey gets up after he gets, like, the, you know, he gets the wind knocked out of him, tries to get up. He's, like, limping. I'm like, oh, my God, poor guy broke his leg, you know, whatever. Then out of nowhere, this vulture-looking thing just, like, swoops down and starts, like, picking at the monkey. I have it on video. It's great. So at this point, my son and I are shocked, and like, zoo personnel aren't there yet. And next thing you know, it was a vulture and bird? Some other scavenging kind of bird. I don't know. They run over, and it's like a pylon on this monkey. It's crazy. It's just surreal. Monkey's not making noise. No weird screaming or anything. I don't know. So the birds end up killing the monkey.
Did anybody from the zoo end up showing up?
Well, like, the birds are like tearing into the monkey, and like a few seconds later, here comes my son running over, all out of breath, with like. It must have been like, she looked like a teenager, you know? It's like a high school girl working, you know, or a college girl working a summer job.
Yeah.
You know, stereotypical zoo attire, you know, the hiking boots, the tan cargo shorts, the Crocodile Dundee, you know, tan shirt with the opalettes, you know?
Yeah.
And she's running, you know, and she sees what's going on, and she's like handling. She's trying to get on her radio, but she can barely hold it. She's shaking. She's like, "Oh my God! Oh my God! There's an escape enclosure. Blah blah blah." And you know, and you hear on the other end of the radio, like, I don't know. I forgot what her name was. Like let's make up her name.
Stacy.
Generic name. Stacy. Stacy, what? She's like, enclosure two, there's an escape, and enclosure three. And they're like, wait, there's an escape in enclosure two and three? No, enclosure two, and he fell in, and oh my God, they're eating him!
Oh my.
So, and instead of some alarm going off or people rushing over, the zoo people on the other end of the radio just saying, huh? What? And she's just like, come here now! So then, like, people rush over. And they kind of shoo us away, and I'm there videotaping this, like, these birds eating this dead monkey. It was crazy. It was my one son, he was just, like, kind of, like, at a loss for words.
Well, now, how old are your kids?
They are 10 and 12.
Oh, okay. So they're not totally, they're not totally traumatized.
They're not. And the 12-year-old...
It's upsetting,
it's funny you mentioned that. The 12-year-old is still trying to catch his breath, and he was, like, trying to, you know, get up to speed as to what he missed. And the 10-year-old, Cameron, he was just like, wow. You know what that was,
nature.
Dad? Yeah, exactly. Dad, that's nature right there. I'm like, what do I say to that as a dad? I mean, I'm obviously proud of him.
No, you're father of the year, Alex.
I mean, I'm proud of him. Thank you, Ben.
It happened.
I'm proud of him because he's not spazzing out.
Sure.
You know, and that's a very mature response. I mean, you know, it's, which surprised me that Kyle came up with that. But anyway, that's a whole separate thing.
Zing. But Friday, ladies and gentlemen, the Zynga.
But yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, I feel so horrible saying that, because this poor monkey escaped. He had 30 seconds, a minute of liberty, and next thing you know, he's getting you know, devoured by vultures and like these carnivorous cranes. I forgot, you know, what the species.
This is how we survived through the early days of man. We stuck together. This guy off on his own.
That's a good point.
Crawling. Tell me, he doesn't know what happens if you fall 100 feet. He knew the risks.
Yeah.
He took it.
Do you really think he knew the risk?
I think he had a vague understanding
of
the risk.
He was a bright monkey to get up there and say, okay, fence, net soft. Get up there, evaluate the situation, and find a seam in the net and figure out how to untie it. That's a bright monkey.
There's a very Icarus analogy, sure. I think you can make there. You know, don't you get too close to the sun, you know, you might get eaten by vultures.
Yeah.
I think that's how they ended that story.
Yes, you fall to the ground.
I love the part where you saw a monkey get eaten at a gator farm, and it was by birds.
Did not.
I know, right? It was completely random, completely unexpected. That's why I said if he would have fallen into like some sort of gator pit or something, it would have been probably equally as vicious, but maybe a little bit more like, yeah, I saw that coming.
Do you suppose the gators feel emasculated by that?
If they would have been aware, maybe.
Yeah. It's like, sure, we're supposed to get the monkeys, not these birds. Can't believe it. That's so embarrassing.
I would imagine that.
And what was interesting was, when the zoo personnel got there, they're like, okay, the typical response, nothing to see here, folks, nothing to see.
It's
like, keep on walking as they're roping away the two ends of the pathway, which goes towards this thing. I'm like, that's what I see. I got a video, man. It's great. And my kids are like, yeah.
Oh, that poor girl. I wonder if they ever trained her for...
You know,
they probably trained her for escape. But maybe not falling from one enclosure into another.
Exactly. And like, one of the cool things that I took pictures of at this nature preserve was they had escape ladders in all the pathways. And essentially, it was like... It was a rope ladder that essentially went up to a little tree stand or a tree house, so that in the event of an alligator escape, you know, the zoo patrons could have somewhere to run and climb up to. It was pretty cool. I've never seen anything like that. So,
This is a great way for you to start off your re-entry back into the show. I don't know how we're going to top that for the rest.
Yes,
of the
Yes, you need a story exactly to that effect every time you come in.
Hopefully my travel budget will allow for exciting adventures like that.
And maybe we could do a remote.
That would be
if it had happened on Friday between noon and 2, next time, call us. We'll just put you on the air.
You can
describe the humanity.
That would be a great remote.
Nature.
You know, going to some nature preserve. Every I don't know, maybe we could do a once a month segment. Traveling, a LCR kind of segment on location.
Yeah.
Fantastic. When we come back, we'll have on Sophia Noir, studio director of Arabesque World Dance, to see if she has any horrific zoo stories. We'll be right back on Bluegrass Bios. Stay tuned. And Benjaneer Wolf wanted me to point out that is his Gene Wilder tribute. Rest in peace to Dr. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Okay. Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios. Our first guest today is Sophia Noir. She's in here with her husband and promotions director, Ken Farrell. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
All right,
doing
good. Well. She is a Middle Eastern belly dance artist and studio director at Arabesque World Dance, and also the owner of the Sophia Noir Middle Eastern Dance Company. Okay, thank you guys for coming in again. I want to start by speaking for all undercultured Americans. Belly dancing seems like this mystical form of seduction that one rarely sees outside of like a James Bond exotic scene or something.
Or a Shakira concert.
That's right. Yeah. Is that belly dancing?
I had to throw
that
in there.
Yes, it is.
What is the Cliff Notes version of the origin and the tradition of Middle Eastern dance?
Well, just like any other country, even here in the United States, there's just dances that are part of the culture. And that's really all it is. It's a cultural dance, and we have a lot of folkloric dances that come from those different cultures, the Middle East, North Africa, along the Mediterranean.
So you're from Central Florida, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I just wanted to touch on this out of curiosity, but you have a very Middle Eastern name and a very Caucasian appearance. Is it common to adapt a stage name once you reach a certain...
What do you mean?
I know. I hope if this gets touchy. Is this common among belly dancers to adopt a Middle Eastern sort of pseudonym?
It has been common for many, many years. My teachers are very old school. The ladies that I originally learned from started dancing in the 70s, and back then a stage name was incredibly important. Nowadays, not as much so, but I picked a stage name when I started performing professionally, and I've been using it ever since. Though Sophia actually is my real middle name,
okay,
my Christian given name, but I've just changed it to the Arabic spelling.
How did you get started?
Oh, it's a funny story, actually. My mother-in-law gave me a call one day and said that her next-door neighbor, who was in her 60s, was going to go to exercise class at the Adult Educational Center. And they lived in a 55-plus community, so when she says an exercise class for them, I'm like, oh, great, what are we going to be doing? And she invited me. She said, you know, why don't you come and take it? And then I ended up bringing my 10-year-old daughter with me. And it was Rock Sharkey, or belly dance classes, with these sisters who originally learned in New York City and were now teaching in Ocala, Florida, in this tiny little horse town.
It's funny because you would expect, like, you know, not a senior center, but a 55-plus center, you would expect Tai Chi or something, you know.
Oh, country line dancing or something.
Country line dancing.
I don't know. But, so, and this was Ocala, so, you know, I mean,
I know Ocala.
Yeah. So I had no idea what to expect, and I walked in and signed up for it thinking, you know, great time to spend with my mother-in-law and with my daughter and have a little bit of bonding, and these ladies start talking about Rock Sharkey, which is Eastern dance or belly dancing.
So they were way into it at the time already.
No, it was their first time trying it,
okay.
My mother-in-law and her friend. And in fact, my mother-in-law took like 2 classes out of the 6-week session, and it just wasn't her thing, and she never went back, and I have never stepped away from that dance floor.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to picture my mom belly dancing. I can't.
Well, it is supposed to be for all ages. It is.
Looks like a great workout too.
If
right?
originally from the countries that it's from, the women, it's their dance that they do at parties. You know, if somebody's having a birthday party, that's the way that they move when they're dancing. It coincides with the music. The music helps your body to move a certain way.
Hmm. You're also pretty highly trained in martial arts as well, right?
Yes, I was a third level brown belt, and I was just a month away from testing for my black belt, and I had to stop because of financial reasons, unfortunately, at that time. So I haven't been practicing with it a whole lot lately, but I do a little bit of practicing my katas and whatnot, but... Yeah.
Was that, how does that help with the performing dance moves?
Well, one of the things in karate was the physical ability to be able to do deep knee bends and lift my legs high and be very flexible. So that helped a lot. And then we had to learn katas. Katas are the formations of movements that you do, that you practice in order to, if you actually are in a fight, they become second nature to your muscle memory. And so doing that helped me tremendously in my dancing to learn choreographies and get that muscle memory to move and dance.
All right.
I have a two-part question, actually, about the belly dancing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, it's a form of artistic as well as personal expression, right?
Yes.
So is part of it like Hawaiian hula dancing? It's storytelling. Does it have any of that sort of component? And the second part of the question is, you know, Middle East, which Middle Eastern countries have belly dancing? Or is it all of them? Or is it particular to certain ones?
Those are great questions. Okay, so there's a lot to go into that.
Okay.
All right, so first off, storytelling, not so much. It's more like a party dance originally.
Okay.
It has transformed, though, into stage performances. So as an individual, as an artist performing on stage, I will sometimes find a song that speaks to me emotionally in some way, and there can be a sort of storytelling behind the movements that way.
Sure. So, but it's an individual thing. It's not like
yes.
Hula Dancing where it's
exactly.
passed on
right.
generation.
We're not singing words or acting out certain stories of our history when we do this type of thing. It really is about just enjoying music and moving to it.
Okay.
Kind of like if you were to go to a friend's party and they played some slow rock music or something like that, and you just are dancing. That's basically what it started out as.
Okay.
So now, what countries does it come from? Egypt is a big, big contender in it. Egypt has the originators of what people consider belly dance. But you have a lot of Middle Eastern countries that are connected to it. The Lebanese as well
sure.
do the what we would call belly dancing.
Right. And that's a Shakira connection because she's half Lebanese. And
yes.
That's why she incorporated it into
yes,
her.
Yes, that is exactly it. And actually her teacher, the person that's worked on her choreographies and taught her dancing, is from Miami, Florida.
Cool.
She's an American.
Interesting.
But anyway, so... the other countries, like if you talk about Iraq, Iran, Turkey, Jordan, you know, a lot of other countries like that, they have their specific cultural dances that are folkloric style, and they're not really a lot of belly exposed or cleavage exposed. The women are very covered, and there's not a lot of the undulations and shimmies going on with the movement. It's mostly fancy footwork and beautiful arms and head movements and things of that nature that they do. But many of those countries have adapted to the rock sharki or belly dancing that you see in the Egyptian style and the Lebanese style.
Sure.
So they
kinda
do
makes
have
sense.
It.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's not
know.
Actually originated from those places.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, with the Shia and the Sunni differentiations within Islam, I guess that's where that would come from, I would presume, because I think Egypt is a little bit more left-leaning than the other ones, but it stands
yeah.
to reason.
Yeah. Well, traditionally, Egyptians are actually, I mean, if you go back quite a ways, they're Coptic
right.
Christians.
Sure.
So it's different.
Sophia Noir, Arabesque World Dance in studio with us. I read on your website that you some of the movements that you do are inspired, and maybe I got this wrong, but by Ibrahim Farah, is that
Ibrahim
that
Farah?
Okay,
yes.
Okay, good. I knew I was going to screw that.
No, it's close enough. I probably mispronounce his name half of the time as well.
So much like martial arts will get passed down from like through these Gracie families or something like that, you know, are these the ways that the styles are sort of developed, is through a master and a pupil?
Yes, very much so. We even here in the United States, we have what we consider East Coast dancers and West Coast dancers. So you have the people that did really well in the dance and in the performance arts, and they became the popular teachers, and then people want to mimic their styles. And so Ibrahim Farah was up in New York. He was the founder of the Near East Dance Company, and his work was actually paid for through grants. Because he was just so well loved and his arts were just so amazing and beautiful. So he took these cultural dances and he made them more theatrical and more acceptable to the common people, where they could see the shows and really enjoy the artistry of the movement. Because the typical folkloric dances are more like line dances. They're not very exciting and they're very repetitive. And we call him Bobby. Bobby, so we don't have to say the whole name. Bobby was very much loved here on the East Coast. And Bobby was of Lebanese descent. but he was American born and raised.
So let me get straight, though. I mean, and I don't know what the gender predisposition is for belly dancers, but I'm thinking females, but yet Bobby is the teacher for belly dancing.
Well, okay, so there are different styles of dance. We have male belly dancers. Most of the time, the male belly dancers are actually gay, but not all of them are. But a lot of the dancers that we call the male belly dancers are just heterosexual guys that are doing the folkloric style dancing in the masculine form, but they also learn the feminine form in order to teach it to the girls. So
that's interesting. I mean, it just takes amazing talent to be able to do that, I think, to learn both styles and then to be able to pass that on. I mean, you have to be a fantastic teacher to do that.
He was absolutely an iconic, amazing person, I got to say.
What are some of the health benefits of belly dancing?
All right, well, belly dancing is really like any sort of dance or physical activity. Mm-hmm. You are using your whole body and you're moving and grooving, so you burn a lot of calories, you get your blood pumping, you get your muscles stretching and moving, you get all of your joints moving around, so you lubricate your joints. So those are all things that are great for it. For women specifically, we build a lot better core strength, so our stomachs and our lower backs and everything become stronger and more supple, and we have better control of them. And that right there helps you with everything. If you have a good, strong core, you have a happy life, you know. So that's definitely a big thing.
Sophia Noir and Ken Farrell in studio with us. She's the studio director of Arabesque World Dance on at
Chair Avenue.
Chair Avenue. I'm sorry, I was trying to look at the actual address, 451B. What kind of classes do you and your other teachers put on over there at Arabesque, Sophia?
The majority of our classes are belly dance-based classes. We have beginner level, which we call intro classes, and slightly above intro we have fundamental classes, and then I have a couple classes where we specifically teach choreography, so if somebody wants to come and learn an actual full dance, they can come to those classes, and those are all belly dance based. And we go through a series where we'll do Egyptian folkloric dances, we'll do Lebanese folkloric dances, we'll do Persian classical dances. So we visit all these different countries as we work our way through the year.
How many different styles are you proficient at?
Oh, dear. Proficient, I would say my favorite styles that I really work on the most are the Egyptian and Lebanese style belly dancing, Lebanese folkloric, many different styles of Egyptian folkloric from all over the country. You'd be amazed because every single city and town, even sometimes households, will have something a little different going on. And then I do American cabaret style, which is like the 70s nightclub scene belly dance, which is a mixture of...
That's probably the James Bond kind of
yes,
thing that you
use in
the
movies. Yes, so, very
right?
much
right.
so. The, back in the 70s, we had a lot of nightclubs that were open, and the big way to get entertained wasn't to go and sit at home and watch TV or do Pokemon Go. You know, you would go to the clubs and they would have live bands, and the musicians would be from Greece and Turkey and Egypt and Lebanon and Jordan, Afghanistan, and they would have these musical instruments that they brought here to the United States from their home countries, and the music that they would play would be this fusion of all these different countries. They would have classical songs that had been written back in the 1800s or the early 1900s that they would play, but they would have their own flavor to it because they have the instruments from their own countries. And then you would have dancers that would come in and they would perform with these bands. So the dancers had to adapt and do these movements in different styles from the different countries because they all have a different flavor to them. So that's like American cabaret style belly dancing.
Huh, it almost evolves kind of like a dialect. or something, I guess. Yes. Like if you're talking about linguistics.
Yes. Well, you know, United States, America, we are the melting pot, right?
Right. Yeah.
So this happens even in our arts, in our music, in our dance. It becomes a melting pot of so many different things put together.
Very cool. You also have, and if I get any parts of this wrong, but you have your own dance company outside of Arabesque, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. What kind of services do you have at for your Sophia Noir dance company?
Middle Eastern dance itself is, like I said, it's a cultural dance. So the people from these different countries, it's part of their celebratory lifestyles. We're often hired to perform at weddings. We do wedding receptions. We do what's called a Zephyr procession, which is where the bride is led in with a procession of musicians and dancers to the groom for the wedding. It's a celebratory sort of, you know, here comes the bride and she's changing from this lifestyle to her new life. And so we do this procession. I've done christening parties, you know, this little girl's going to be christened, so they have a big celebration. They hire a live band. They hire belly dancers to come in and perform while everybody's having dinner. You know, that's a pretty typical thing with our company. And then we do corporate events. Sometimes a big corporation will have a gathering, and they'll theme it in some way. Like they'll do a 1001 Nights theme for their big event. And then, of course, they want to have belly dancers come in and put on a good show. It's always family friendly. It's always very artistic and beautiful. And then we have a lot of people that go, I never expected it to be what it is. You know, like they expected something completely different.
If you want more information or find out if you want to book Sophia, you can go to dancesophia, that's SAFIYA.com. Or if you want to find out about the classes at Arabesque World Dance, you can go to Arabesque, and I'll spell that, ARABESQUELEX.com. I know I repeated the first A. So ARABESQUELEX.com. One of the things that's really, you know, you talk about like what people's perceptions are before they actually watch a show, that it maybe they think it'll be more provocative than it actually is, I guess.
That's a big thing. I mean, okay, so we were talking earlier about Tahitian Hawaiian dance. Now these girls, they dance in these tiny, tiny little mini skirts. Often they're wearing coconut bras,
right?
But people look at it and they think it's so beautiful and it's so sweet. Now, belly dancers, we actually are covered up more than that. Yet it has this sort of provocative nature to it that people like think it's so sexual and sensual. But the fact is that it really is an art form. Yes, it is beautiful. We're talking about a female form that is undulating and moving to the music, and often it's passionate because if the music is a love song, that the dancer will have this look of ecstasy on her face as she's dancing. But it also can be very much a fun and exciting and playful type of dance. And we never take our clothes off.
It's important to note, ladies and gentlemen.
Never.
Could you tell us about the costuming in Middle Eastern dance? It's very sheer, but also very ornate. Do you make your own? Are they? What is the material?
Everything and anything.
Yeah.
I personally have not made many costumes myself, but it's really just a time constraint more than anything.
Sure.
Most of the costumes that I wear, I purchase from artists that have made these in Egypt and in Turkey. Those are my favorite places to purchase from, though we actually have costumers here in the United States that make absolutely amazing, beautiful costumes. The workmanship is extraordinary. They make them out of, I mean, the skirts can be velvet or silk or satin or chiffon. So it's not always see-through. Sometimes it's actually completely opaque. We wear like a bra and belt set. That's a pretty common thing when you think of like American cabaret style. And it's just covered in beads and sequins, or sometimes we'll have, what are those called? The big stones, not like diamonds, but, you know, like...
Like crystals?
Crystals, yeah. You know, Swarovski crystals, things like that, to make it glow and glitter on stage, so that it just it's supposed to complement the movements of the dancer is what it's for.
Is there a male analogy to this? Like in, like Latin dance, there are women that have certain movements. But is this like, I guess part of the reason maybe why it could come off as sort of more provocative is there's not, like it's this these women dancing, but all the guys are just kind of sitting around. You know what I mean?
That is actually what we would call Orientalism, that idea. If let's say that you go to an Egyptian wedding, and so they'll have the professional dancer that comes in and performs, and let's say that's me. So Sophia comes in and does about 15 minutes or so of just this performance to entertain the audience. And then near the end of that, I would go to the tables and get people up, and they would dance with me. And this would be men, women, children, doesn't matter. And they'll get up, and we dance together. And then the next thing you know, the next song that comes on is a party song. And then, boom, the dance floor is covered with men, women, children, grandmothers, grandfathers. And they're all dancing pretty much the same way. They're undulating. The hips are swaying back and forth. This really cute thing the guys always do is they take their suit coats and they open them up like wings, and then they move their hips around, you know? And it's a guy thing.
I've seen this, actually. It's great. No, it's awesome.
It's totally a guy thing.
Or done.
Yeah.
No, feed me enough alcohol.
And like I said, there are male ballet dancers, and then there's male folkloric dancers that they do like the drum solo, and they'll do, there's a style of dance that we call Saidi, or Rocks Asaya, which is a stick dance, and the men dance with a stick and they swing it around, and it's very masculine.
It kind of sounds Maori a little bit. The New Zealand kind of dance. Is it similar to that?
I think it is.
It's more masculine.
When the men do it, it's like a show of power and strength, and sometimes they'll even do like a mock battle while they're dancing with the sticks. So, I mean, there's so many different styles. It's just, I've been doing this for 16 and a half years, and I think I haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg in what I still need to learn.
Well, to follow up on Kyle's question, are there duets that men and women can do together? Like if, say, you know, a husband and wife want to take lessons at the same time?
There's dances that will have the men and women dance together, and those usually are folkloric style dances, and there's lots of those. Absolutely.
You mentioned sort of the props that can be involved, and when I was going through your biography, there was a fairly lengthy list of the different the different equipment that you can use. Can you describe maybe what some of the objects that you'll use while you are dancing?
Sure. Okay, so the most common ones, which I don't actually consider these props. They're more like an extension of the dancer, these couple of things. One of them that is really common and is really loved is what we call the finger cymbals. In Egyptian, we call them sajat. And in Turkey, they call them zils or ziller. And they're just like little finger cymbals. We put one on thumb, one on the middle finger on both hands. So we have a set of four. And we play them literally as a musical instrument while we're dancing. So you can have really good zilling and you can have really bad zilling. So if you get a dancer and they're really bad at it, they annoy the heck out of you while they're dancing. Because it's like ting, 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 ting. But if they have musicality, they can enhance the performance by using these. So that's one of them. Another one that's really common that we use we consider it an extension of the dancer as opposed to a prop, is the veil, the silk veil. And it's a way, many dancers use it almost as a partner, that they flow the fabric around and do beautiful, intricate formations with it while they're dancing. But then other than that, we have the stick, the asaya, which is a folkloric prop that's used. If you go to many countries, the men carry a stick around with them. Mm-hmm. They use it for self-protection. They use it to move the chickens out of the road when they're walking down the street. The wife needs something off of a high shelf, and they'll use the stick to kind of move it to the edge of the shelf to grab it.
Why don't we do this? Yeah,
right. Yeah. So it's like how maybe out in the country a guy carries a Bowie knife with him, you know? So a lot of Middle Eastern men will carry a stick or an asaya, especially if they're out in the country, and it's they use it as a walking stick, all sorts of things. Different towns have different lengths of sticks that are common. But so that's something that the dancers dance with as a prop. Another one I use often is the shamadan. And the shamadan actually is a candelabra. And that's one of the things that we use in the wedding processions. You balance it on top of your head, and you dance with it.
With lit candles.
With lit candles. Oh. Well, if the venue allows you to have open flame.
As, pardon me while I go on YouTube like and look this up.
Elk size. It's enormous.
It is. It's big and it's top heavy, and it has a history that goes way, way, way back, because candles were used in processions to bring the bride to the groom's house because they didn't have electricity, so the streets weren't lit up. And weddings were always done in the evenings because it's too hot during the daytime. So that's where the shamadan originally came from, and we still use it to this day. You know, so there really are a lot of different props. One thing that's really, really popular because it's real flashy and beautiful, I don't use it that often because to me I feel like it doesn't take a whole lot of dancing skill to use them, is these big wings. We call them Isis wings. If you've ever heard of the Egyptian goddess Isis, yes. She's always portrayed with wings. Okay. So this is actually a modern thing that I think American actually formed these, made these up, and now they make them in Egypt and sell them, and they're considered an Egyptian prop. But they make them out of like a metallic lamé material, mm-hmm. and they're really shiny, and you pull them out and you start doing spins with them, and everybody's like, ooh, you know.
Would that be something that's fun for like a beginner, somebody starting out?
Yeah, beginners love them. Well, beginner dancers love props, period, because they don't have to dance so hard if they're using the prop. But
now, if somebody's listening and they're considering coming to have their first lesson, what can they expect? What kind of attire should they wear?
We just use exercise clothes. In fact, most of the dancers come in like yoga pants. And a tank top or a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. I always ask everybody to wear something that's stretchy and breathable and close-fitting.
And do you do a little stretching beforehand?
We do toning? Stretching before and after. Good, good. We do a warm-up. I treat this as... I grew up as a ballerina. I did ballet and jazz and tap and everything as a kid for many, many years. So I've been classically trained. And then, of course, with the karate as well, I've been trained... You have to take care of your body, you know. So it's important that any time that we dance, we always warm up, we always cool down, and we're always really, really safe with everybody. That's important.
Safiya Nawar, Middle Eastern belly dance artist. She's a studio director for Arabesque World Dance and the owner of Safiya Nawar Middle Eastern Dance Company. I want to thank you guys for coming in and spending some time with us today. But before you go, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the events that are associated with mm-hmm. Arabesque. So, Ken, poise yourself as the promotions director. starting with 2 weeks from today, you have the steampunk masquerade. I've already seen some pretty nifty costuming on your Facebook page. What can you tell us about this show coming up?
Well, it's in coordination with the Gallery Hop. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, we're really the only, the only live arts venue.
Okay.
And we actually showcase a couple visual artists as well. And there'll be performances all evening long from 5 till 10, I believe.
What's the costuming going to be like there? Is that...
steampunk.
What makes it steampunk? Yeah, is that...
Steampunk's kind of Victorian age meets futuristic steam power.
Okay.
I guess that's the best way to describe
it. Did you see the end of Back to the Future 3, Kyle?
Oh, yeah.
Or right. The Wild Wild West Will Smith movie.
Yeah, yeah, that's right? A good example. Yeah. Yeah.
No, don't watch that.
Rotten Tomatoes rates that as probably abysmal, yeah.
Now, how will people get to, because the gallery hop is primarily in the center of downtown. Is there going to be a, what would you call it? Like a, not a van, but like a trolley or
no,
it's not a trolley. That's not the word. Like, will people have to drive down?
They'll have to drive there. And actually it's growing in that direction. And Country Boys is actually part of the gallery hop now as a support venue. So they'll actually have artists that they're sponsoring.
All right. I'm glad it took a very long time to ask a terrible question. that is Friday, September 16th at Arabesque World Studio, or World Dance Studio, excuse me, 451B on Chair Street. That's just off Broadway, just down from Country Boy Brewing. I'm having a hard time to finish this out. Okay, so that same weekend, though, is the Cirque de Virgo. And that's not at Arabesque, right? But Sophia, you're going to be performing that Saturday, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'll be there at Cirque de Virgo the entire day.
Putting on, you've got three appearances?
Yes, yes. Okay. Three separate appearances, three separate costumes, three totally different styles, and none of this is traditional.
How long are you usually up on stage?
There's no real usual to that. I have had performances where I'm almost an hour wow. dancing. Though usually if I'm going to an event like Cirque de Virgo, I probably will have about 10 to 15 minutes per performance that I actually do. If I go to an Egyptian wedding, I might do two or three 20 to 30 minute sets within a couple hours time frame. It varies depending on where I'm at, what's going on.
And that's at Homegrown Hideaways in Berea. If you want more information, you can click their events tab at arabesquelex.com. That's arabesquelex.com. Before we let you guys out of here, and I appreciate your time, I know the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families is an important organization for you guys. Your May fundraiser, Feather the Nest, is already months past, but I was hoping you could tell us why that show and that nonprofit are so important to you guys.
Well, if anybody, and I hope that everybody here in the Lexington area has heard of the Nest Center for Women, Children, and Families, they take care of thousands of people in our community. They help families in crisis. They provide free daycare for families in crisis, diapers, toiletries, children's clothing, all sorts of things. So they really are important to our community and for people who need help here. So every May, we do a Feather the Nest event, which is the fundraiser at Arabesque. So it's located right there at the studio. And we have dancers from our local community, as well as other cities and states that come and perform at the event. And all we charge for entry fee is a donation of toiletries, diapers, children's clothing, and that sort of thing.
Thank you very much for coming in, guys. Sophia Nawar,
thanks.
Middle Eastern belly dance artist. Ken Farrell, her husband and promotions director. She's the studio director at Arabesque World Dance and the owner of Sophia Nawar Middle Eastern Dance Company. For more information, go to arabesquelex.com or dancesophia, that's SAFIYA.com. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back on Lexington Community Radio. This is Bluegrass Bios.